Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas. It's Monday on this program. Monday, October 7th, or 18th, rather. So you know what that means. College football is in your podcast feed with my good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, how are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back at it, back at the pod. Another excellent weekend of college football. So let's do this.
A boring weekend in Knoxville, Tennessee. I must attest, not a lot went on here in Knoxville.
So you weren't at the game, correct?
Unbelievable that I did not go to this game. I'm so happy with my decision. Like, as it was unfolding, I don't think I would have gotten home till like 4 or 5 a.m. because there were 102,000 still full and the parking lots and everything. Parking's a problem on campus. Like, I genuinely don't know how long it took for people to get out, and they shut down the highways and everything. Like, I'm going to guess I would not have gotten home till 3 or 4.
It's so, no bueno. I mean, what do you have to say, man? I feel like... That was a terrible showing, right? The call, they got the call right.
No,
like,
they didn't.
The one that they were so mad about, the 4th and 24.
Okay, like, so clearly you didn't watch this game. I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there.
I mean, it wasn't the one call usually that excites a crowd like that.
Correct.
I definitely agree that first one with Corral, like the scoop and score they had, that was an awful call. I don't know how you can say like the forward progress being stopped or whatever in that situation.
Especially considering the whistle was not blown. So they did not blow a whistle for forward progress being stopped. So they changed it after the fact because Corral just acted like he didn't understand what was going on.
Well, and you've seen those calls before, too. I feel like I never like that call. When the play is still happening and a guy fumbles like going backwards, like it's still happening. Like there's no stopping forward progress. Like that's kind of garbage. But throwing the stuff on the field, I feel like, specifically at the Ole Miss team, too. It's like, it's one thing to throw things on the field, but like straight throwing it at the opposing team, that was insane. That was just madness.
Well, I told you on this program when Heupel suggested that the crowd be hostile, and I'm not pinning this obviously on Coach Heupel, but what I'm saying is that like sold out venue, Kiffin's return, beer sales, alcohol sales in the building. People pre-gaming and tailgating for 12 hours on campus and then moving into the stadium for the biggest showdown with a villain who, this is part of, like, Kiffin's funny. Like, the stuff that he tweets and stuff like that and the way he handles all of it, it's objectively funny. Him catching the water bottle, leaving the venue, and then throwing his visor into the stands. Like, these are objectively funny things, but it's also just that like you're still stirring the pot. Like you know what you're doing. Like you're still getting these angry drunk people angrier. I'm not putting this obviously on Kiffin. Like this is just all really complicated, and obviously I don't condone what happened there, and it was a bad look to throw all that, and it was just not a good look. Like, there's just no excuse for any of that. But it's also just like, what did you think was going to happen in this environment? Like, this was something I was concerned about this week, and that was part of the reason I did not want to be there in person. Like, I expected something like this if the game was close, because of the confluence of events and everything that went into this game. The game was poorly officiated. There's no question about it. And Greg Sankey not addressing the officiating, but addressing the water ball throwing and everything else. Like, I thought that was just something that was not going to appease the 99.9% of people that he said were acting accordingly, which is important to note, because there were 102,000 people at this game. And then you see on Twitter, it's like, oh, the trashy Nealon fans and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, 102,000 people didn't do that. It was about 50 to 100 people did that. But it was not good. It was a bad look. All that can be true. But the way this game, like, once that happened, that opening series, like, once Corral got that fumble reversed, and their explanation for why it was reversed, I was nervous. Because if you go to these games, Matt, I don't know if you've seen with beer sales in college football venues now, people just double fist because they don't want to wait in the line because lines are long and they're understaffed. So they just get two tall boys and then they chug those and then they go back in and get two. Like,
but you can't blame this on alcohol. You know?
You can, it's absolutely, like, NFL, part. Oh, for sure.
NFL games have had alcohol for, you know, decades. So it's like, it's not like these people like are just now drinking at Tennessee games. You know, it's like they've been getting hammered going to Tennessee games forever. It's a tale as old as time. It's family heritage. But
I don't think it's just that. I think, I'm not saying it's only alcohol. I'm saying that is a major part of it. Like, I just don't think there's a way around admitting that's, like, unless you've been in Knoxville and seen how tailgates work and seen how it works inside and out, like, it's just hard to understate a stadium that big with a fan base this passionate.
It's one of those things where you lose the moral high ground once you do something like that, right? It's like, yeah, Sankey might should address, like, some questionable calls.
Well, it's not even just that. He, like, should have addressed that. He should have addressed the injuries. Like,
that's the main story.
So Ole Miss was falling. Like, so Tennessee, the reason that, like, whenever they would get any kind of momentum offensively, because they were getting momentum, Ole Miss would drop. And then that player would come back in a play later. And that sort of thing, and Heupel talked about this after the game, where it's like, I'm not on the committee, I don't know what to say, like, that's something that they have to work on, whatever. But that's a problem. Like, you have to pull them, and they were, like, openly pontificating on the broadcast about, like, what to do. Like, how do you stop this? Because Ole Miss was literally just inhibiting Tennessee from getting any rhythm offensively at times because of the faking of injuries, and you can't do anything about it. Like, how do you legislate that out of the game? I don't know. It's just like, if you, because it makes it impossible to decipher who's actually injured and who's not. And it's just, when the player goes back in a play later, then you obviously know what he was doing. I think there's just so many things, so many different variables that, like, the obvious one is you don't do that. It's a bad look. It's garbage. Don't do it. However, there was so much going on, and this was one of the worst called games I have seen. And I am not that kind of person who blames officials, and, like, Tennessee ultimately did not lose because of that. Tennessee lost because of a multitude of reasons. Teon Evans not playing, that hurt them. Jabari Small is just not that guy. The offensive line being in shambles. Cade Mays only playing 3 snaps. The whole right side of the offensive line, that Cooker was getting obliterated. Him not sliding enough. He's probably gone for the year, it looks like. Hooker's now gone for the year. Joe Milton ran out of bounds as time expired. He ran out of bounds. That happened in a football game. Like, that, of course, is how this game ended. Joe Milton running out of bounds on the last play of the game.
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking on that one. It was just, you got to have some awareness there.
I mean, but I'm one of those guys who
I couldn't get over with the fans, like, reacting the way they did. It's like, you have 3 timeouts left. You can stop them and get the ball back, which is exactly what they did after, like, the 20-minute break we went on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's no reason to lose your mind like that. And it's like, you can say it's like 50 to 100, but, like,
it was.
It had to be way more than that.
No.
With how long they continued to throw things. Like, I mean, obviously it wasn't all 100,000 people, but that would be fucking, that would be chaos, you
correct.
Know, but it's still enough people throwing it to be a bad representation of the Tennessee fan base. You know, it's like, unfortunate, like, obviously that's not everybody, but it's still like a really bad look.
I'm not disagreeing with that part. It's a bad look on that front, but it's a bad look for 150 people. Like, it's not a bad look for 102,000 passionate fans. Like, it's not.
I mean, those people are representing Tennessee.
You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't just group everyone.
I'm not saying all Tennessee fans are, you know, obnoxious rednecks who throw shit on the field, but that did happen, and it was Tennessee's fans in their stadium. Like, you know, you can't really, you got to own it, you know? Like, same with the Braves.
I don't have to own it. I wasn't a part of it. And the majority of the fan base weren't a part of it. You know who has to own it? The people who did it.
Say that your fans didn't do something that was, like, an embarrassment, you know? It's like, I was at the wild card game, Braves-Cardinals years ago, with the infield fly rule, when the Braves fans did throw things on the field. It's like, it's just classless. Not to mention, it's like, the refs aren't gonna pick it up, you know, like what's, it was just a pointless thing to do that's just gonna delay the game, like, and it's just a bad look all around.
I don't disagree with any of that. Poorly called game. Tennessee's in a lot of trouble. It looks like Joe Milton's gonna start against Bama. I think Bama opened as like 4 touchdown favorites. It's about to get really rough. Losing Hooker is just a devastating blow for the rest of the season.
Some real Kellen Mond vibes from Hendon Hooker on Saturday. I feel like just really impressed with his playmaking. Tennessee just seemed to, you know, have an identity offensively once he took over. So, I mean, is it known that he's missing the rest of the season, or he's out for indefinitely right now?
It was bad. And the stuff that I've read and the people that I've talked to, it certainly seems to be pretty ominous, I will say. But we'll see. We'll see. I hope the best, because he's been a delight and really a savior for this season. Well, that covers Tennessee Ole Miss. It's good because they weren't even in our pick'em. Oh no, they were in our pick'em. Never mind. So wait, no, were they? No, were they?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, they were. Okay. But yeah, that's it. Matt Corral is a warrior. That kid took a beating as well. I don't know. It was pretty crazy. I also will say, this is not surprising whatsoever with the network and with what we know about Sankey and everything like that. But like, they showed Kiffin so much in this game, man. Like, I don't know why that is, but Heupel, the Sports Renaissance woman and I looked at each other, we're like, they have not showed him like maybe 2 to 3 times in this game. Like, they have showed,
that's the storyline though.
But they just show Kiffin all the time. They would not stop talking about Corral. They wouldn't talk about Hendon Hooker and what he was doing with this team. They weren't talking about the absence of Teyon Evans. They weren't talking about the impact of the offensive line being in shambles right now. They wouldn't talk about Tyler Barron and Byron Young doing their work, Juwan Mitchell being out for this season in this limited linebacker room, because they got torched. Like, that was the story of the game too, is Banks and Beasley getting torched by Corral and not being able to effectively spy him, because Tennessee held everything in check except the quarterback spies on third and long. So Matt Corral's just a paper cut machine. He's not a big play guy, just paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. And it's very frustrating. The game was almost identical to what Florida did against Tennessee and what with Emory Jones. It was almost the exact same situation. But yeah, you live, you learn, you move on. And hopefully the best for Hendon Hooker.
You got to be impressed with what Matt Corral did, just as far as like just carrying his team.
Mm-hmm. But he really carried him.
The fact that he needed to carry the ball 30 times, like, I don't feel like that's a good sign for Ole Miss.
Well, Parrish had nothing. Connor and Parrish did nothing. Tennessee's run defense has been good all year, and they did nothing against the Vols front seven.
Yeah, I mean, if Matt Corral's going to have to run that much, like, not only will he probably get hurt at some point, he's just not a big guy, but that's just not what you need your quarterback doing week in and week out. I just don't think it's a sustainable, you know, way to play. Honestly, I could see him losing a couple times just with, you know, if they're relying on Corral to really, you know, supplement the run game like that. Like 30 carries, like that's kind of insane.
I don't even think it's kind of insane. I think that's just insane.
I'll give my brother credit too. He said he threw out the Deshaun Watson comparison with Matt Corral, and I was like, I don't see that. Like, he's athletic, but he's not used in the design run the same way Watson was at Clemson. But I mean, the way he looked on Saturday, like, it really was giving some Deshaun Watson vibes.
He might be the number one pick in the draft next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been the best quarterback in college football, I think, through, you know, seven games so far.
Six, I mean, it's either him or Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, I would give the nod to Corral.
I mean, Pickett's put up bonkers numbers. Pickett's been remarkable. But yeah, okay, well, let's get into our green line. Matt's stat of the weekend. Your segment, sir. What is your stat of the weekend?
My stat of the weekend, sir, is that the Florida Gators are now 2-6 in their last 8 games versus Power 5 competition.
Mm.
Is that bad?
That's not good.
It's not good.
The team they just lost LSU, to fired their coach this week.
That's what I'm saying. I was just about to say LSU is 8-7 since winning the national championship against Power 5 competition, and they're firing their head coach. So I don't know. Is it time for the Dan Mullen hot seat talk? What are your thoughts?
We'll have to see how this goes. I think at the very, I don't think we're there yet because I think Grantham is, I don't know how he's not the first to go. So I think we're at the point where it's like Mullen's going to have to move on from Grantham. And a lot of people made the point, like, he should have done it before this season. Like, he should have done it after last year. But I don't know. I think it's going to come down to his loyalty there and fixing this defense. Because, I mean, the offense is fine. His loyalty to Emory Jones, it's probably cost him a little bit. But that weird quote about Richardson, he had to come back out and say, I'm committed to Florida. I don't interpret it that way. But I don't know. I don't think Mullen's in the hot seat yet just because of how last year went. But I think if he does this again next year, yes, I think we're talking about it. I just think we're at the point where Grantham has to fall, and then we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll get all the way into Florida LSU when we're going through the pick'em. But
do we have to?
Yeah, we gotta get all. That was a great game. We gotta get into that one.
Okay. But, I pick great. Can I make a point for my headline story of the weekend? Can I give you my headline story of the weekend?
I mean, is there any other story? I feel like there's really the one huge headline. What is your headline, sir?
Take Georgia off national television until the SEC title game. I think we're there. I think we're there. It's just a waste of time. Like, it really is a waste of time. I don't know why.
Did great ratings though, man.
I don't know why. It was an awful watch. I hated that game. I watched the whole thing, Matt. And the notes I was taking, I'm like, why am I taking notes on this? This game's over. Like, there was a point where it's just UK had to, that drive, that long drive in, what was it, the second quarter, where they had the screens. Wandale was doing the jet sweeps. You had the tight ends getting involved. Rigg, who's just gigantic. And then they're just calling all kinds of great plays. And then I think Rigg is the one who had the touchdown at the end. They had to just unload everything. Like, Liam Cohen had to just pull all of his best plays to get one touchdown. And then it was over. Because like they punted. They had a couple 3-and-outs. And that's it. Like, if you have a couple 3-and-outs against this group, it's over.
That is how it felt. And even the touchdown drive at the end. I mean, that was like a 22 play,
yeah,
like 11 minute drive, like, just to get one more touchdown. It's like, it just took so much to get two touchdowns on the board. Like, me and my brother and I were at the game this weekend, like I told you, and like, we were talking, like, we're up, you know, in third quarter, like 24-7, and it's like, you know, we get points on this drive, it's officially over, you know. And then you're like, I mean, honestly, we have 24 points. It's already over. Like, there's no way they can score 24 points. That's just where this defense is right now. It's just, yeah, you just have to do so much just to get one or two scoring drives the whole game.
It's just silly. Like, it's just it's tough. Like, they just, Jordan Davis and Carter in that defensive line, it's just not fair. Like, the blocked field goal was bonkers. Like, Jordan Davis, I don't know how
Devontae
you block
Wyatt
it
too.
Yeah, I just don't know what you do with that. It's not fair. Like, it's legitimately like something I wrote down. I'm like, this is not fair. I don't know what you're supposed to do if you're Kentucky. Like, what are you supposed to do with this? I don't know.
Yeah, especially a team that wants to run the ball. Mm-hmm. Like
Rodriguez, like why were they doing those draws at the middle? It's like, you're doing, that's a waste of time. Throw that out the window. You don't need to do that ever against Georgia. Tennessee, go ahead and throw it out the, like, do not try and just, oh, we're going to be a little bit physical to make them respect us in the middle. No, they're not going to respect you. They're too big. They're not going to respect you. They're going to mow over your offensive line. That's happening.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a Georgia Bulldog right now, man.
Okay.
Number one in both polls unanimously for like the first time and probably since the Herschel Walker years. So,
Man, big, you're the last team standing. Like Iowa going down to Purdue. Like you're the last. I mean, because Cincinnati, is bonkers.
There's plenty of teams, though, right now. I mean, obviously no one's respecting the Oklahoma States and Michigan States of the world right now. We're hardly even Michigan, but, like, Oklahoma's right there. And Oklahoma, honestly, with Caleb Williams, like, they're a legit top three team now. Mm-hmm. Like, this, the rate ranking was totally just, I don't know, artificial with Spencer Rattler at quarterback. Like, yeah, it might say number two, number three next to your team, but we all can see that this team is flawed. Like with Caleb Williams, this team, they look like the second best team in the country to me right now.
Well, what we want is, tell me if you disagree, like this is my dream scenario now, is I want one Georgia, two Ohio State, three Oklahoma, four Cincy. That's the dream playoff scenario, right?
Yeah, you just want to see a Georgia-Cincinnati rematch?
I would love to see what that looks like. I think they get stomped, but I would like to see it where both teams actually take it as seriously as possible, where there's no opt-outs and everyone's playing. I don't think Cincinnati has a chance, but I think it would be exciting to watch. I would be very intrigued by it just to see what it looks like. Then you get the winner of OU Ohio State, which might be the two best offenses with Caleb Williams, like you said, inserted into there. So if you have those two offenses ready, like I don't know, I think Ohio State will score on Georgia. They'll make it interesting, but it does just feel like, man, I'm sorry, I know you don't want to do this, but I just, everything is coming up Georgia right now. The stars are aligning.
I'm all about it, man. I'm all for Georgia this being the year that Georgia wins a national championship.
The stars are aligning. I don't want to get ahead of, I mean, everything's coming up Atlanta. The Hawks might be the best team in the East this year. Like, who knows? The Braves might win a World Series.
Man, 2-0. 2-0 in the NLCS. Gotta love it.
What an ending. The cardiac Braves. Don't bunt. Brian Snicker, I tried to defend you a little bit on the podcast. Terrible decision. Stop bunting. Stop it. He got bailed out. People will forget that they got bailed out with by Eddie Rosario. Shout out to Eddie Rosario and his four hits tonight. But alas, let us move.
But that's why you bunt, is because a base hit like that Eddie Rosario just had, ball game. Okay. You win a run. You win the game. All you need was one run. So Dodgers made a great play to get that out at second, too. So can't even hate on that. I don't know what your saber metrics, what your computers are telling you over there, but sacrifice bunts can work sometimes.
Good Lord. Well, we've talked about Georgia, Kentucky. We've hit on Tennessee, Ole Miss. Let's move to the Big 12, the Nooner. I watched this whole thing. This was a great game. Great game. Fox broadcast is top notch. Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt should actually call. Like, the only people who should call college football games at this point is Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson and Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler. That's it. Like, they're elite. No one's touching them. It's not even close.
Well, we got like 30 games a day.
I just want them in the booth.
So I don't think that's a. I don't think that's a logistical possibility.
It's not. Can we clone them?
They do an excellent job.
Can we clone them?
Hey, but what's the crew? Todd Blackledge and the other
Mike Patrick. Dude? That was 2003.
No, not Mike Patrick. The bald dude. God, why am I blanking on his name? I think of him. I think of Big East basketball.
Joe Tessitore. Sean McDonough. Yeah.
Sean McDonough. Todd Blackledge. Like, that's a quality crew. Like,
Sean McDonough was actually underrated on Monday Night Football. I thought he was good.
Yeah,
Tessitore is awful.
Joe Tessitore,
he's awful.
Joe Tessitore is fine. Greg McElroy's fine.
McElroy's fine.
You're just a hater.
I'm not. It's elite. Like,
I bet
Fox,
you don't like Jordan Rodgers.
He was awful. Oh my God. Jordan Rodgers and Tom Hart were so bad last night.
I got a soft spot for Tom Hart. He's a Braves guy.
Well, you know what he's not? Their preposterous take of like how obvious it was that he was, and they were fine with that spot call at the end, was just, it was 2 yards back. Like, there wasn't even like the original spot was awful. So the original spot was off. It was off by 2 yards.
The right hand was extended, but the ball was in his
left. No, you can't see the other side. They never showed the angle of the other side. You can't see where that knee is, and you can't see where the ball is for that spot. The only way that spot is even anywhere close is if the yellow line is off by a yard or two. That's it. That's what we can't see, and that's what I wanted to see, is like where the yellow line versus where the actual first down marker was, because I think the yellow line was off on the broadcast, and that would make more sense if the yellow line was off, because there is no way that spot was correct if the yellow line is right there with the first down marker. It's just not.
Yeah.
I'm fired up again.
Yeah, I can tell. I didn't want to get you fired up, but here, let me give you the totals for the weekend.
Oh, no.
As you know, we had some very similar picks this weekend, and I did not do very well.
Mm.
So I think that would be you also did not do very well.
Oh, no.
Since we had so many of the same picks. So I was 4-7 overall.
Ooh.
My first losing weekend of the season overall, and then 3-8 against the spread. Mm. And you were 5-6 overall.
There we go.
4-7 against the spread. So
did I make up a game?
Made up
or
a
two?
Game on me on each one, but I left the window open this week for you to close that gap. But and then Zeus is now 3 straight losses on it. So
Zeus,
we gotta get him back. He got cocky after those first 3 wins. So he's gotta do some more research. Get back in the lab. Really, really crunch some numbers, get back on track in week 8. But man. I know we already talked about Georgia, Kentucky. I had a stat for you for Georgia, Kentucky before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels this year have combined for 1,564 yards, 72% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns and 4 picks. Who we were just talking about is probably the best quarterback in college football this year. Matt Corral has 1,728 yards, not quite 200 more yards than the two combined, completing 66% of his passes. That's worse than Bennett and JT Daniels, and 14 touchdowns to 1 interception. So that's 3 less interceptions, but 2 less touchdowns. And he's at 9.4 yards per attempt. Bennett and JT Daniels combined are at 10.1 yards per attempt. So I know there's a certain thought about what Georgia is this year. Like, no one's saying they're not the number one team in the country, but I think people are still drastically overrating, or I should say underrating, how good and how like explosive this offensive attack really is. Like, their quarterback play has been basically as good as anyone in the SEC. It just doesn't seem like it because they're blowing teams out and they're not having to throw the ball all around the yard, but they are throwing the ball well, and like they have an explosive offense. And Kentucky had the ball for like 15 minutes more than Georgia in this game. It was almost 38 minutes to 23 minutes time of possession. So Kentucky was basically just holding the ball, and Georgia was still able to put up 30 points on them. So I feel like it's just this offense is so impressive, and I think Stetson Bennett isn't really getting as much love as he should. Like, he started as just kind of a game manager or whatever. That's what people want to call him, even though it's not even really his style. He's honestly more of a gunslinger, but he's the scrappy walk-on. So people just kind of assume he's a game manager, but the guy can throw it deep, and he's been super accurate so far this year for Georgia.
How do we get back on Georgia? What happened here? How do we get back on?
We kind of skimmed over. We jumped in. Uh-huh. We jumped into some games before we really got in the pick'em. So, yeah. I had some things set up that I wanted to some nuggets I wanted to put out there for Georgia. So I had to throw them out there. But
great. Love it.
But we can get back to our pick'em.
Oh, man. But I think you and I could have completed some passes behind that offensive line on Saturday in Athens. I don't know. Dude had some time. Dude had some time to figure That's some bad. Stuff out. And also, Marshall looks like a star. Like, he is a star in waiting. He's freestyling out there. I like
Marshall.
It. Marshall. Marshall? Is it not Marshall?
Receiver? What are you talking about?
The receiver?
Oh, A.D. Mitchell.
Mitchell. Why did I say Marshall? Yeah, A.D. Mitchell.
True,
excuse me.
True freshman. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he looks great. And for most of the game, it was basically Mitchell, Bowers, and McConkey were basically in on just about every single play. So it's just crazy with what this Georgia's offense is doing without, you know, we know about George Pickens, but even Jermaine Burton, like Dominic Blaylock, Kyaris Jackson, like so many of the guys that you thought were the top four or five weapons on Georgia coming into the year. Even Darnell Washington's, you know, just now coming back. He's probably got two or three catches on the year. Like, it's just crazy with what this offense, how good they've been, and just how many guys they're still missing. And I honestly think there was a lot of guys that could have been back for this game, mm-hmm. and maybe even the week before. I think JT Daniels kind of included that. I think Georgia just doesn't really need them. Like, honestly, I think they can win without risking further injury to some of these players, and they're just going to get everybody back. Because as good as Stetson Bennett has been, I still think this offense has room for improvement, and I think when JT Daniels is in, I think he's still the better quarterback.
Yeah. It's an amazing flex for him to just be like, he's still a little, it's like he's a little under the weather. We're just going to keep holding him back until we're actually concerned about being tested. That's how you know not to put him on national television. It's like, they're not concerned to put JT out there, so take them off.
It really is. It seemed like for a while, it was like, we'll just make sure JT is ready for the Florida game. Mm-hmm. And now it would looking at Florida, you're like, well, Georgia could probably beat Florida without JT Daniels mm-hmm. too. Maybe just wait till the Alabama game. But obviously that's a crazy thing to just let Stetson start like seven or eight games in a row and then put JT Daniels in there. So at some point he's got to play, or Stetson Bennett's the guy.
I wonder what the over-under is on Stetson starting the SEC title game against Alabama.
I don't know. Yeah,
I wouldn't rule it out.
That's not what fans want. As much of a feel-good story as he is, that is still not the first choice.
Yeah. Speaking of not first choice, Texas, Oklahoma State. So Casey Thompson, I don't think is the first choice for a lot of Longhorns fans. This game was interesting because Texas did a lot of stuff early on where I was like, oh, they're going to run away with this. And when they went up two scores, Bijan Robinson doing his thing, learned that he grew up idolizing Reggie Bush. They both were five, like Bijan's a star. However, OK State just they don't break. They won this game in the second half. They dominated on defense. Like, OK State's defense is legit. I am so ready for Bedlam. So ready for Bedlam, because I think it's going to be so interesting to see the disparity between these two teams. But the difference, Warren, this running back, little man, but he is a workhorse. He, like Chuba Hubbard, who out there in OK State country, he was on fire. They had no answers. Oklahoma State's composure was top notch. Like, they did not, like, there was an awesome pick six in this play where Casey Thompson just stared this dude down to get him back in, get the Cowboys back in it. But man, Cowboys just, they were not fazed, and they just beat them down. The pressure would not stop. They're sending three people and getting people home. Like, man, their defense was top notch. Tay Martin, just great on the outside. But the quarterback play in this game was, oh my goodness, Matt. Like, the Zach Robinson versus Colt McCoy days are long gone, because Spencer Sanders versus Casey Thompson was, let me do the meme here. It ain't it. And it was not it. It was Casey Thompson was atrocious in this one. Just sailing balls. It was bad. Lost a lot of confidence as the game went on. Hudson Carter going for a play because Thompson got rocked. But man, I think Sark called a good game. I thought Bijan Robinson was the best player on the field. But Warren, man, 30 carries, bunch of yards, TD to ice it. Like, they were good. OK State was impressive, sir.
Man, Zach Robinson and Colt McCoy days, that really brings me back right there. Mm-hmm. Was that 2009? Yeah, Oklahoma State, you just had to be impressed. Like, everyone, no one's buying them, right? Week in and week out, but they just keep winning. So
you have to watch them understand them.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I felt like going in, it felt like I think I said this on the podcast, like if this felt like the opportunity for a letdown for Texas. You know, they just put so much into that Oklahoma game. And even though it's like, if the game goes differently, it can almost be like a positive, you know, and it's like, oh, look how close we are to being one of the top five teams in the country. Like, you know, we're on the right track. But the way you just collapsed, and now you lose to Oklahoma State, and obviously Oklahoma State's a very good team, but at home you lose to Oklahoma State the following week, it almost feels like they allowed, you know, last week to creep into this week. And it's first year coach, it's first year Sark, and you know, this wasn't the year Texas, you know, was supposed to win anything. But I'm curious to see how Texas bounces back moving forward, like with now consecutive losses.
Absolutely. We'll see. We'll see. Auburn, Arkansas. So my wondering here was, my radar was off on this one, where I was just like, I think I said before, I'm like, are we sure about Arkansas? Are we sure? And now we can just go ahead and put them in the bottom tier in the SEC West. Now, look, this is the best division in college football. Being the bottom tier there doesn't mean you're a bad football team. It just means there are still real problems. The Auburn offense figured some stuff out. Great Bo Nix game. Tank Bigsby still can't get a lot done. But Auburn just stunted on Arkansas on this one. And Auburn, I think, is a little bit better than we thought. And I think Arkansas is a little bit worse than the team that we saw early on, because I think right now Auburn's better. I think LSU Arkansas is going to be fascinating at this point. I think Arkansas is down there in Miss State. So I think the two worst teams in the West this year are Miss State and Arkansas. And I think the A&M game was a fluke. And I think if you play that game 100 times, A&M wins that game 90 plus.
See, I don't know about that 100%. Okay. It is a valid point that they faced the early Calzada game. Mm-hmm. So he's appeared to take some strides since then. But you can't take that win away from him. Like, mm-hmm. they did beat a Texas A&M on a neutral site.
No, I'm just saying,
but
context now.
What I was saying, like, I think people were sleeping on Auburn, I think, a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, they could be the second best team in the West. Like, Ole Miss could also be the second best team in the West, but like, they still have Mississippi State. They still have LSU on the schedule. But I'm saying, if they have wins over Arkansas, or if Arkansas has wins over A&M, LSU, and Mississippi State, then they're clearly not at the very bottom of the SEC West. Like, they're in the middle of the West.
No,
like,
who are you putting Arkansas in front of right now?
Well, I'm saying they've beaten A&M for.
But
one.
If you're playing them right now, like, what we know about A&M and what we know about Arkansas right now, week whatever, going into week 8. Do you think they're a better football team if they played again this weekend?
I mean, that's a valid point. Probably wouldn't pick them, but...
But that's what I'm saying. If we're recreating the deck, if we're reshuffling the deck...
But they still have LSU. They still have LSU and Mississippi State. So mm-hmm. They could easily be better than either of those teams.
For sure.
They'd be the fifth best team in the West. Maybe fifth best team, I guess, in the West. Is that the bottom? And a seven team? Fifth seems like middle, right? 3 through 5 is basically the middle. 1 and 2 at the top. 6 and 7 at the bottom.
Okay.
Like, I feel like these are 3 straight losses. Like, so, you know, it's obviously not great, but like, it's not like Auburn just manhandled them or anything. Like, they had over 200 yards rushing. Like, they were moving the ball. Like, this was a very tight game the whole way, you know? Like, so... I feel like Arkansas is right there. I think that's just where the SEC West is. Like, someone eventually is going to have to be on the bottom just because that's how standings work. But I think Arkansas is still, like, I'm not just, like, I don't know, I'm not just, like, selling Arkansas stock like they were just some huge pretender. You know, I think it's just, this is what the SEC West is, and they're all going to play each other. Some are going to win, some are going to lose, and eventually most of them are going to have, like, 3 or 4 losses, 5 losses on their schedule. Or on their record.
I think the difference here too is just if you look at the numbers, because Arkansas was better in a lot of different key stats, but the one thing that jumped out to me, and I just think that this was the game, and this is the limitations of KJ Jefferson, who had 18 carries and 66 yards. He's just not a downfield threat, and Treylon Burks did what he could, 9 receptions, 109 yards, 2 TDs, but Bo Nix take chances downfield, and Bobo will take chances downfield, and Briles did not, and the difference in yards per attempt, 11.2 for Auburn as Nix went 21 for 26, KJ Jefferson 6.5. You can't win football games in the SEC with a 6.5 yards per attempt. Like, that's just bad. It's just objectively bad. Can't win. Got to have some explosive downfield stuff against a team like Auburn. George did it a bunch.
Yeah, for sure. Arkansas is definitely still lacking a little something, but I'm not going to pretend to know how this SEC West season is going to shake out.
I don't know. I feel like I have a pretty good, I don't know, I feel a lot better about like where the SEC is as a whole right now. I feel like I got a pretty good understanding.
But you think about it, like, obviously you, no shade being thrown at you. You're a Tennessee homer, you know, like you're very biased Tennessee fan.
Incorrect.
Like, I'm not saying it fogs your,
I was going to say, that's what biases is. It means it fogs it. I can look at them objectively.
But it's like you show your bias with Tennessee, whatever. Don't worry about it. Skip over that first part. Ole Miss, I feel like Tennessee is not one of the best teams in the SEC by any stretch. You know, I think if you were making a power rankings right now, what are they, 10, 9 or so? Like, so
at full strength?
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, at best, they're the eighth, ninth best team in the SEC probably right now. Like, just
they're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, middle, but like lower half, you know.
It's, I don't,
like,
think they're lower half.
The contenders by any means. I'm not trying to throw shade over here.
I don't think they're lower half.
But Ole Miss, like, I'm still not sold on Ole Miss necessarily. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously going into Neyland, super hostile environment as we saw.
Okay,
but like Tennessee, this is a good team. Like, this is a good team that has an explosive offense, and you went on the road and you got a good SEC road win, right? So I'm not taking anything away from Ole Miss, but at the same time, you just beat maybe the eighth or ninth best team in the SEC by a touchdown or less than a touchdown. It, like, Ole Miss could still chirp up and lose another game on this schedule. Like, that's like, I think that everyone is kind of solidifying them as clearly the number two in the West. But it's like, you know, they got LSU, they got Auburn, they got A&M, they got at Mississippi State. I think Auburn is also on the road. Like, those are a lot of swing games for Ole Miss. Like, they might feel better than all those teams currently, but like, we haven't experienced Ole Miss consistently beating any of those teams, you know what I mean? So it's, I think the jury is still out on how good Ole Miss still is.
All right, Florida, LSU. We talked about Richardson's postgame comments. We know now that Ed Orgeron, it looks like, had already been on the way out before this one. But he still, do you remember when I said that, like, I heard the rumblings and I saw someone on the at the Athletic, I think it was Bruce Feldman, who made this point a week ago, where I said on the pod, where I was like, I thought that, like, really stood out to me, that little nugget where he was like, yeah, like, there's no one on the staff that's, like, capable of just being the interim for the rest of the year. So when you were talking about Coach O being fired, I was like, I don't think he's going to get fired midseason. I think they're just going to drag this out, because that made sense to me. When you look at the staff, I'm like, I don't know who's going to be the interim for half this season. And then they negotiate a thing where he just finishes it out. And you know what, man? I wish more coaches and more programs would do this. Like, Clay Helton, why couldn't he have just done this at USC? Just been like, yeah, this is it. Just keep it going till the end of the season and then you're out. Like, that's it. Like, why don't more programs? And it also prevents the interim from being too good where you have to consider keeping him. I would do that. I guess maybe coaches don't want to do it.
I worry about the disgruntled employee, you know, just like coming back to work for months and months. Like, this guy's already checked out. He knows he's not back next year. Like,
true.
He doesn't care. Like, he doesn't, like, you know, just maybe there's some recruits visiting, you know, on certain weeks. It's like, you want Orgeron talking to the recruits, like, and when they're visiting for the Alabama game, like, that's probably not a good idea. So I don't know. It says something to where Ed Orgeron's at in his career, though. I think personally, I think when a guy is an actual, like, legitimate head coach. Not, like, saying he's not a legitimate head coach, but if he loses, like, after he gets fired from LSU, like, who wants Ed Orgeron as their head coach, honestly? Like, who's lining up to be the head coach?
That's a complicated thing, because the off-the-field stuff is bad. It's just like, I mean, I don't know. It's so complicated because of stuff. It's just, I don't think he's fit to run a big program. I don't think he's capable of managing a major program. So, like,
and it's a total package. That's everything that goes into it. So it's like, I think it kind of says something about him that he's like, you know what? Just let me keep coaching. I won't do anything bad. Like, just let me keep coaching this season out and then I'll leave. Like, you won't have to worry about me again. But I feel like if you still have, you know, opportunities out there, you just kind of, you get fired and whatever, you spend your time trying to figure out who you could assemble for your next staff or something like that. But it's like, Orgeron, this feels like the end of him ever being a head coach, honestly, at least at like the Power Five level.
Well, I think he already confirmed he's sitting out next year. So I don't know. Also, he just would not be good on TV. I don't know what he does.
I might be, and like just as like a character, you know, just like people might tune in because he's just kind of ridiculous. Like, I could see that, but it's kind of like just like Gene Chizik. You know, we talked about Gene Chizik's 1 year, just kind of fluke year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly that's kind of what happened with Ed Orgeron. He's 8-7 versus Power Five teams since that national championship. Like, no, I don't think anyone's knocking on Gene Chizik's door to be their next head coach. So I think that was just kind of, I think it's run its course now. So he's like, yeah, I'll enjoy a few more weeks coaching the team, bringing up the 2019 team as often as I can so people can remember that they did like me. There were some good times. It wasn't all bad.
Hmm. I mean, he may have put together the best staff team in college football history. Like, that's still in play. Like, that's, he'll be able to hold on to that forever. That 2019 LSU team was just, we'll remember that team forever. Like, that is one of the more, and also just the swag and the get the gat, like all of that, that whole season, that whole team, just pretty remarkable.
What's a better job to you, USC or LSU?
LSU, no question.
Okay, how many jobs are better than LSU in your opinion?
Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to probably have,
and that's probably it.
And then LSU at four.
Yeah, okay. That's probably it.
So who do you think, like, are there, you know, like, I know it's like super early to talk about the next coach, but like everyone's going to want that LSU job. Like, I think it's just, I think this is the worst thing that could have happened to USC.
I think it's the worst thing that could have happened to Michigan State.
Oh, you think Mel Tucker?
There's too much smoke there, and he's already shown that if you offer him enough money, he'll leave. Like what he did to Colorado, where he was just like, when he left that late in the process, and just being like, no, and they kept throwing more money, and he's like, no, and they kept throwing him more money, and he was like, all right. So I think LSU has the resources to just keep throwing money.
And I wonder about like a Billy Napier or something like that.
Mm.
Like obviously he knows Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But on a smaller level, like, I don't know. I could.
Jimbo's LSU, the wild card.
Urban Meyer.
No, he doesn't.
LSU could honestly go for anybody.
Yes, I think.
But I feel like Lane Kiffin, honestly, is just, I feel like he's just going to learn from his original mistake of like leaving Tennessee too early. Like, he's building something at Ole Miss, and I think he should just stay put.
I also don't think bigger programs will put up with it. Like, he still can't help himself with all kinds of stuff. I don't think the popcorn ready. Like, I just don't think this stuff works at a big program. Like, I just don't.
I think almost every job that opens up in 2021 or 2022 would love to have Lane Kiffin as their
disagree
coach. Like if Dan Mullen gets fired next year from Florida, I feel like they would love to have Lane Kiffin as their next head coach. Like, LSU might love to have Lane Kiffin as their head coach. Like, I think, I don't know. I feel like Lane Kiffin has a lot of things going for him, I think, right now.
We'll see. BYU Baylor. Baylor rolls for another one. I am so excited for Baylor. OU still has Baylor and Oklahoma State on this schedule, Matt Green. Do you think they escape both?
Yeah, it's tough because, like I said, I feel like they look like an actual top three team in the country with Caleb Williams at quarterback. But yeah, this schedule, it's about to get serious for sure. And I like this Baylor team a lot. Like, this is just your classic Big 12 matchup, right? Baylor knocking off BYU. Like, this is what we've always grew up on. But yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, those are really the only two that I would worry about. I mean, obviously Iowa State, that game doesn't look nearly as interesting as we thought before the season started. But yeah, there's some landmines out there for sure.
Pittsburgh, Vatek. This was an easy one. Vatek just doesn't have the offense. Why is Kenny Pickett not in the Heisman conversation? That is something that I wanted to ask you. They have a top three offense and everything that matters. Kenny Pickett's just been a star in year 19 in Pittsburgh. I don't know. What is it about Pitt that people are just like not jumping on there? They might be the best team in the ACC.
Yeah, they honestly might be. I think, I don't know, because it's like Clemson's not even really that good anymore.
Clemson's not good. We can just go ahead and end this. Like, just for what you can call it a mulligan year, whatever. Penn State just had it this past year, but like, they're bad. Like, we just need to treat them as a bad football team.
But it's still like the brand is still there.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not reality.
I'm saying this week Pittsburgh plays Clemson. Like the ACC, this is just the problem. Like Clemson had that built-in cachet every year in the ACC. So, you know, they're going through this weak schedule, but you know they're good, so you just kind of ignore it and you still hype up the things they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know who's good in the ACC. So when Kenny Pickett's doing this against Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, like, those are the only two ACC teams they've played so far. So obviously Tennessee looks like a good team, but the defense was, you know, questionable early on in the season. It looks like it's getting better, but there's still just not really many marquee games to say, oh, well, Kenny Pickett did this against that team, so you know he's good. You know what I mean? So I think maybe if you see a big performance and they knock off Clemson, maybe people will start giving Pittsburgh a little credit because, yeah, I mean, this is the number one scoring offense in the country. And like, when does the national media not talk about the team that's number one scoring offense in the country, right? Like, this is a sexy team, and you'd think they'd get a little more hype.
That's what I've been saying. Quality loss for 10 there a few weeks back.
Yeah, doubt that loss to Western Michigan, though. That just,
it was so weird.
It's really hurting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so uncharacteristic of, you know, every other game they've had this year.
NC State, Boston College, NC State, laying it to your Boston College Eagles, Matt Green.
Yeah, my Eagles didn't get it done this week. So NC State, Devin Leary came to play this week, so shout out to the Wolfpack getting the dub, pretty much cruising in that one. That was an easy one.
It really was. NC State, man, do they play Pitt in the regular season?
I don't believe they do. No, they don't play Pitt.
Oh, man.
Because as you know, NC State is in the Atlantic.
Right.
Pitt is in the coast.
As one
because
knows,
so
yes.
Good with those conferences. But yeah, Pitt and Clemson, of course, is in the Atlantic. So NC State's definitely got the fast track to that division. But November 13th, they got to go to Winston-Salem to play the we'll see if Wake Forest is still undefeated at that point. But I mean, that's where the ACC Atlantic is legit going to be decided this year, is on November 13th, NC State at Wake Forest. Like, what
game
a,
day
what
let's go.
Gotta love college football. Game day is praying for that, honestly, because that's a game you never get to see. When was the last time game day went to Wake Forest?
I don't think they've ever been, right? There's no reason for them to have ever been.
There's that one team they had. Did they win the ACC?
The Riley Skinner
they
team?
Went to the ACC game? Oh, man.
Was it Riley Skinner?
The Orange Bowl? I'll have to look that up.
Okay.
Riley Skinner.
It might have been a Riley Skinner team.
I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. Iowa State, K-State. K-State can't get it done. Iowa State riding the ship. We talked beforehand that this was a big one for Iowa State, that they could not drop a third loss here before we even get to November. But I think they showed some stuff. against K-State, a good K-State team. What did you make of the Cyclones this weekend?
Yeah, this they took care of business as well. I was definitely, you know, someone who had jumped off the Iowa State bandwagon. So, although I was probably never on the Iowa State bandwagon, to be honest, but you know, they went into the Little Apple, and I questioned their ability to do that. So, gotta give them some credit.
Breece Hall, 30 carries, 197 yards, 2 TDs. Brock Purdy, 22 of 25 on the day. Good effort for the Clones. Next.
And to go back to Wake Forest, that was Riley Skinner as a good call by you. They went 11-3 that year, won the ACC, and lost to Louisville in the Orange Bowl. So, yeah, that was the team I was thinking of. Beat Georgia Tech 9-6 in the ACC championship in Jacksonville. I want to say
Joshua Nesbitt was the quarterback in that one.
No, that was Reggie Ball.
No way, that was Reggie Ball.
Reggie Ball was the quarterback in that one.
Are you looking at that? Wait, what year did you just say?
This is 2006.
Was Reggie Ball still at Tech in 2006?
Yes, this was Calvin Johnson. This was the year, I think Calvin Johnson's junior year at Georgia Tech.
That's wild. I cannot believe he was still there in 2006. I felt like 19. I don't know. I just placed Reggie Ball before that. Stone Mountain legend, Reggie Ball, for that matter. I lost my train of thought.
You know, he had Craig Lumpkin.
Craig Lumpkin. Did they both go to Stevenson?
Yeah.
Okay. Craig Lumpkin. Now, that is a name I have not heard in a long time. Air Force knocks off the Broncos. It is an off year for Boise and BYU.
Yeah, I was going back and forth on that one.
You're just not a Troy Calhoun guy.
The fact that Boise State was a 6-point favorite, that made me think maybe the odds makers knew something I didn't, that they had an advantage over Air Force. But I should have believed in the Falcons. Got it done.
There you go. Last one on our pick'em. Man, Arizona State, you had the playoff right there. You just were staring at it. And then remember, you gave me some flack for making the case for the Sun Devils last week on the pod. But I still took Utah. They rose to the challenge. Utah's good. Cam Rising has been much better than Charlie Brewer there. Just a bad loss for the Devils. Like the Utah's good. But man, if they had won that one, if they had won on the road in Salt Lake, they were looking at a date with Oregon in the Pac-12 title game with a potential national or college football playoff appearance on the line. But that is now gone for Jaden Daniels and the Fighting Sun Devils.
Well, and I told you this was going to happen, and I still didn't pick it. I was like, we're all saying Arizona State is good. Like, okay, now we're all sure they're legit. And I knew they weren't going to win. Like, I picked them, and I was like, I'm picking them, but I almost guarantee, like, once we think we know something in the Pac-12, it flips right around. So, yeah. And honestly, if I would have known all of the tributes they were going to be doing for Ty Jordan and the other guy who passed away this year, number 22.
Aaron Lowe.
Aaron Lowe. If I would have known they had everything like that going on their side, you know, I definitely would have picked Utah. But
I don't like that because it puts pressure on the team, and it's just like we don't know how the kids are going to respond to losing their teammate. Like, that's just not fair to like extrapolate and just get in the minds of these kids losing two teammates in less than a year to just unbelievably horrible situations. Like, I don't know, man. That was horrible for them. I don't even know how they played on Saturday.
Without a doubt.
I couldn't imagine.
Even though College Game Day might not have Tom Rinaldi anymore, but they still got those same tearjerkers in their on their schedule. Like, they did a great piece on this whole situation, and they talked about it, like, because these dudes were like best friends from like the same high school in Texas. So like, these people that were friends of theirs were basically saying, like, it's like the exact same thing happened. Like, it's like we're reliving Ty Jordan's death because it's like the entire Utah football team came, like the entire, like everything about it. It's like they're in the same friend circle. So the exact same people essentially showed up to just do part two of this, just, you know, tragedy of 20, 21 year old kids dying, you know. It's just super sad. But yeah, they did an awesome piece about it on game day. That was really well done. I did not have a dry eye when that piece was over. I'll tell you that right now.
There you go. There you go. Matt, you ready to run the remainder of Saturday's action?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
So Nevada beats Hawaii 34-17, moved to 5-1 on the season. Jay Norvell probably deserves a look at one of these Power 5 openings. If I'm USC, like, I'm considering it. What he's done at Nevada is incredible. Shout out to the Wolfpack. I would strongly consider him if I'm a Power 5 program looking for a stable guy who, you know, at the very least can win football games at a rough place to win football games. Carson Strong, 34 of 54, 395. The first three quarterbacks taken in next year's draft might be Corral, Willis, and Carson Strong. It's pretty wild. Nevada, Liberty, and Ole Miss might have the three quarterbacks taken first in next year's draft. Pretty wild. UTEP, would you like to guess what their record is now after 7 weeks, sir?
The Miners. Mm-hmm. Were they undefeated?
6-1, undefeated in the CUSA, beat Louisiana Tech 19-3 over the weekend. Shout out to the Miners, who've been awful for so long now. Good for them. Good for UTEP. Good for El Paso. Washington's dreadful offense continues. They go down 24-17 to UCLA. UCLA moves on to 5-2. If you recall, also Matt Green last week, I said Army was going to keep it close against Wisconsin, and folks should tune in to see if Army was going to beat Wisconsin. They lose 20-14. Close game. Graham Mertz, 8 of 15 for 112 yards.
Man, pretty much exactly what you thought.
Yes.
This Wisconsin offense was. It's just, oh man, it's unbelievable that this team, with how good they are defensively, they don't have a pulse offensively.
No. Washington State, 34-31. Stanford reeling, 3-4 now on the season. We got Colorado State over New Mexico. Tate Martell got a sighting here for the Lobos. A stunner in Monroe. Shout out to our guy, Terry Bowden, still rocking the suit and tie on the sidelines down there at ULM. Do you know what they do? They beat Liberty and Hugh Freeze 31-28. 3-3 on the season. This program was left for dead. Leek Willis, 23 carries, 157 yards in this one. Didn't matter. Chandler Rogers in the fighting. What are they, Warhawks now? Am I misremembering
that? That sounds right. Yeah. I think that's right.
Shout out to the Warhawks beating those Liberty Flames and Hugh Freeze there. We got Kansas. This was a bad bet for me. I'm sorry for the folks who bought into my Kansas against Texas Tech love. They got destroyed.
I was skeptical. Anytime anyone says anything about the Kansas football team that's positive, I'm skeptical.
Great uniforms, though. Did you see what Kansas was rocking on Saturday?
Oh, you like those?
You didn't like them?
Not a fan.
Ooh, interesting.
Okay. I saw like the LED lights when they glow in the dark or something. It's like, well, that's cool. You're not going to be playing in the dark, but, you know, I like where your head's at. I like where your head's at. They're ready for anything, you know, those Jayhawks.
That's what people say.
I was not a fan. They don't look... My big thing on uniforms is, you know, you can rock some alternates, do your thing, but you got to keep the identity of the team. Like, I looked at that and I was like, that did not look like Kansas. That just looked like the powder blue, baby blue, like whatever. I don't know what that was all about. Never seen Kansas rock baby blue.
Vanderbilt, that's 20.
It's your uniform nugget for the day.
Hey, I like it. That's that's one of your bread and butters here on this podcast. Vanderbilt 20, South Carolina 21. Goodness gracious. Back and forth affair in this one. That's what you want to hear when you're South Carolina fan. It's back and forth with Vanderbilt late. It looks like
this Vanderbilt team has felt a lot worse than some in recent years. Like, oh man, like South Carolina is a lot further away than they think. I think they thought they were.
It's bad. Zeb Nolan will be starting again we learned next week. So Zeb back in the saddle for the Gamecocks. Arizona blanked, fall to 0-6. Colorado gets back in the win column here. Carl Durrell, Judd Fish, two coaches who will not be coaching at their programs in the next 3 years. Speaking of Western Michigan, 64-31 over Kent State. We got Miami going down to which ACC team did we think was going to win it this year, Bull? That did not happen. It's North Carolina, Miami. It looked like before the season, this could be a college game day game. Nope, didn't happen. North Carolina wins 45-42. They get over 500 to 4-3. I don't think Manny Diaz is going to survive this. Still winless in the ACC to this point.
I will say, you're talking uniforms, though. The all baby blue versus the all white. This was a great uniform game.
I would agree.
Some love for that. I love North Carolina busting out the Argyle in football. I don't know. I just feel like it's a sick thing. That's kind of UNC's thing. But yeah, this game, wow. Like, these two teams were ranked both top. Miami was top 15 at the start of the year. Like, now they're 2-4. North Carolina's 4-3. Like, wow. These two teams have to be. Two of the more disappointing teams in the country. I think North Carolina probably takes the cake as the most disappointing team in college football this year. Although Clemson's up there too, so the ACC is filled with those candidates.
Well, Mac Brown said that's your fault. UConn 21.
that's on us.
Yes. Yale 15. UConn did it. 1-7. Shout out to the Huskies, beating the frisky Yale Bulldogs up there in Connecticut. Shout out to them. What is it? Stores? Stars? What is it? Soars? Sars, Connecticut? Where do they play?
Soars?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. My apologies, Connecticut faithful. Northwestern 21, Rutgers 7. Minnesota. This one probably went under the radar for some folks. Minnesota now quietly back to 4-2. Minnesota 30, Nebraska 23. Ooh.
Yeah, I think this one hurts because I think, you know, Nebraska had some positive momentum, you know, some moral victories in some of these close losses they've had, if you will. So I think, you know, there's this feeling that the ship was moving in the right direction to drop this game at Minnesota. That is one of the ones you thought you could win. So that's a tough loss, especially you got Purdue and Ohio State. And then at Wisconsin and Iowa, like, this could be
Nebraska's not going bowling. Losses.
This could be six straight losses to end the season, honestly. Like, they're 3-5 right now. This could be a 3-9 team, honestly.
And I think that's it for Frost.
Like, I feel like it's a 5-win team at the absolute most, because they could beat Wisconsin. Like, I think Wisconsin, if you can't score, you can't win. So I don't know. I would be very surprised if Nebraska. I would be shocked if Nebraska is bowling at the end of the year.
Texas A&M 35, Mizzou 14. Isaiah Spiller runs all over the Mizzou defense, as everyone has this season. We get Indiana, who I told you would cover against Michigan State. You were pooping on Tom Allen's Hoosiers, but they play good defense up there in Bloomington.
Are you misremembering this, sir?
No,
I was putting the Spartans on upset alert this week.
Were you?
I thought this was a trap game.
Okay.
For Michigan State the week before Michigan going on the road, and yeah, Indiana almost pulled off the upset, but I'm excited for the undefeated Michigan versus Michigan State matchup.
Last three here. Mississippi State unfortunately had to play Alabama after a loss. Just an all-time bad spot to be in. Bama 49, Mississippi State 9. TCU 31, Oklahoma 52. Kennedy Brooks woke up in this one. Oklahoma's offense is back. I think they're fine. Actually, we have two more. Cincinnati 56, UCF 21, 3-3. It turns out this was why I was before the season, man. Everyone was putting, I want to pull these up. Gus Malzahn, best hire of the offseason. Gus Malzahn this, Gus Malzahn that. Gus Malzahn is doing a worse job at UCF than Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel, I think, in the year of 2021, is a better football coach than Gus Malzahn.
That's a good call. And I was one of those saying, you know, UCF could potentially be a better job than Tennessee right now. When the with the expanded playoff and all that, and now UCF becoming a Big 12 team, like their chances of getting to the playoff being better than they are at Tennessee. But yeah, Heupel is definitely, I think Tennessee definitely got the better of that hire.
Last one, the stunner of the weekend, Purdue 24, Iowa 7. We knew this was going to happen, right? We knew the Iowa offense was going to somehow come back to bite them at some point, and Jeff Brohm does it. David Stinkin' Bell, my friend, 11 receptions, 240 yards, and a TD. You will see him on Sundays, folks. Oh, my goodness. Purdue laying the, let me check my notes here, hammer. Do you get it? Hammer and rails. Shout out to that Purdue blog on SB Nation.
Oh, man.
Go Boilers. Go Boilers. Love this.
David Bell is the Hawkeye killer. Are you aware of that?
No.
This guy, this is third game against Iowa. You want me to read you his game logs against the Hawkeyes? As a freshman, he had 13 for 197 and a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Then as a sophomore, 13 for 121 Ooh. And three touchdowns. This past Saturday, 11 for 240 and a touchdown. This guy has 37 catches for 558 and five touchdowns in three games against the Hawkeyes. They are praying this man goes to the NFL because they cannot guard him. Like, I feel for Iowa, honestly. Like, no one was really, you know, giving them credit as far as being a playoff contender. Like, when you talked about the contenders from the Big Ten, I think everyone was saying whoever comes out of the Big Ten East, that's the contender for the playoff. And, you know, you feel for them because it turns out it looks like they're right, because for Iowa to look, to just lose it, just be manhandled like this in a game versus a Purdue team at home. Also, like, this offense just, you know, they just didn't do and this is the one thing we've worried about. Like, if they don't win the turnover battle, and obviously they lost it bad in this one, 4-1. Like, if they don't win the turnover battle, like, they haven't moved the ball enough. Like, and that was the question too, is like, they're playing with a short field. So it's almost like playing a weak schedule. Like, well, you know, we're starting at the 30 and we're only getting 30 yards and scoring. So you can't really, you know, you can't really criticize us for just getting as far as we need to get. But for being such a good defensive team, I think your identity when you're this good of a defensive team has to be running the ball. If you're not going to be an explosive offense, you have to at least be able to rely on running the ball. And all season, they have not been a dominant running team. So I felt like they were just kind of a ticking time bomb. I was not expecting this week to be the week that they lost, but this is where we are. 2021 college football season. It's madness.
There you go. There you go. That is all I've got on the games. Is it time for our last segment, the sticker segment, where we add a sticker, helmet sticker that is, and we take one off those who didn't earn it. My ads, Matt Green. David Bell, as you just outlined beautifully, 11 catches, 240 yards as the Hawkeye killer up there in Iowa City. Warren for OK State, just running 11. Guy we didn't really talk about, Tyrion Davis-Price, 36 carries, 287 yards, 3 TDs. Like, that is just, when people are like, oh, why Grantham? Why is Grantham gone? Oh, it's 36 carries for 287 and 3 TDs by that LSU. That LSU offensive line's bad, and that LSU offensive just system was broken coming into that one. So just a bad look all around. I'm also going to give one to Parson and Bo Nix as well.
That was one of mine as well, was Tyrion Davis-Price. That LSU rushing, single-game rushing record. But, Bo Nix. I want to give Brian Harsin a shout-out just for sticking with Bo Nix, because I think after that Georgia State game, we were all thinking, you know, this Bo Nix experiment, whatever you want to call it, this has run its course. Like, it just feels like, you know, it kind of had plateaued. And, you know, the last few weeks, you've seen Bo Nix, you know, make some plays and really just – Do what Auburn needs to get some of these big time wins they've gotten. Like, obviously they had the loss to Georgia, but, you know, the win over Arkansas, the win over LSU, like, those are two big wins. And if this can be a 9-3 team year one, like, that's a great start for his Auburn tenure.
Absolutely. Removing some stickers, Joe Milton, for obvious reasons. He cannot play on set. I don't care what Harrison Bailey looks like in practice. He has to play the rest of the way. I cannot handle Joe Milton for weeks on end if Hooker is out, and it's bad. I could not believe what happened. Folks, if you've not seen it, Joe Milton running out of bounds on the last play of the game. He knew going in that was the last play of the game. Doesn't throw the ball in the end zone. Instead, runs for a little bit, and then instead of getting hit or diving or lateraling or something, he just proceeds to run out of bounds.
It was the complete opposite of that Hunter Henry, Alex Collins play, Arkansas Ole Miss years ago.
Like, yeah.
Game's over. I'm just going to throw it and try to keep it alive. And somehow Alex Collins picked it up and ran for the first down. It's like, oh, this is the last game. Game's on the line right here. Last play. I don't want to get hit. I'm just going to duck out at the 10 and, game over. Oh man, just such an anticlimactic way to end that one too. That was just, it was crazy on Saturday night.
Dan Mullen, for obvious reasons. Clemson struggle bus to get through Syracuse. A nightmarish season continues for the Tigers and those fans. I'm gonna remove one last one. Michigan State fans, joy. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. Things are great. 7-0. East Lansing's rocking. The best offense you've seen in a lot of your lifetimes, which is pretty remarkable. I would be very concerned. Like, now you have to worry about LSU the rest of the way. Now you have to worry because, like, apparently he has a lot of people within LSU who are big fans of Mel Tucker. The Nick Saban connections, obviously. But, man, if you're a Spartan fan, clutch this season tightly because my instinct tells me this is it for Tucker there. You can't win a title at Michigan State. You can win a title at LSU.
See, I mean, it's obviously a better job than Michigan State, but I wouldn't be as quick to say you can't win a title at Michigan State. Like, I mean, they were in a college football playoff. What are there's probably single digit programs that have even made a college football playoff.
True.
So like that right by itself says that they're capable, but yeah, I mean, if LSU comes knocking, like, you just can't say no to that. Like, that's one of, like we said, one of those short list jobs of the year. What I thought you were alluding to when talking about Michigan State fans, joy, we got undefeated Michigan in East Lansing versus undefeated Michigan State. And College Game Day is going to Oregon, UCLA.
Wait, are they really?
What are we doing here? This is a rivalry game, and it's a top 10 undefeated matchup. Like, there's no question. What was the last time you went to Michigan State? There's no, like, you know, there's no fatigue about going to Michigan State. Like, oh man, it's also October. Like, it hadn't even gotten super cold yet up in Michigan. I'm sure it's cold, but yeah, I was just shocked when I saw earlier that they announced it not being East Lansing this week. I thought for sure this would be national game of the week.
That's bonkers. I didn't know they did that. Wow.
It'll be big noon Saturday, I'm sure, right?
You know what? It works out. Better program.
Oh, yo. I'm looking at it wrong. That's my mistake. Michigan State's got a bye week this week. So Michigan's the next game. That's not next week.
Okay.
So I'll allow it. I'll allow it this time. Game day, you get away with this one. Michigan's got Northwestern this week, so hopefully they don't get tripped up, and we do have a top 10 matchup. Is that the Paul Bunyan? No, I think that might Michigan State Penn State. I think there's a trophy for Michigan State Michigan, right?
I know there's one for Wisconsin, Minnesota.
So Wisconsin, Minnesota, that's Paul Bunyan's ass.
Yeah, I don't.
But there's like a Paul Bunyan trophy, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I'll look into that.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is all I've got, my friend. Went to Carnes Oak Ridge on Thursday. They moved that to the rivalry week here in East Tennessee. Beautiful game. But Deshaun Bishop, running back out of Carnes, Tennessee's looking at him. He's a little Bijan Robinson, just an impossible to defend for these kids. But Oak Ridge Falls again, rough year for my Wildcats up here in Tennessee.
That's tough, man. But also to update you, I was correct. That is the Paul Bunyan Trophy, is what Michigan and Michigan State for. So I know the listeners were hanging on that. They needed that trivial information.
Absolutely. Did you watch North Gwinnett and Collins Hill on TV this past week?
I did not, but I saw that Kirby Smart made the trip. He was on the sideline.
For Hunter? Or who? Sam Horn?
Took that Kirby copter.
Who was he watching?
Kirby, he goes to see it all, man. But probably Travis Hunter, you know, you gotta get in his ear.
I was gonna say he's out, wasn't he? He didn't even play.
Yeah, he is out.
Well, there you go. More time to talk on the sidelines.
I'm sure you're not allowed to do that, right? I'm sure there's some sort of rule. Because I saw American Kirby on game day this week, or maybe it was game day, maybe it was on Feinbaum or something. He was talking like, oh, so what's the plan for you know, the coach on Friday? He's like, well, I, you know, I'm going to go see a game tonight. Like, can't say what game, you know, that'd be against the rules. So it's like he knows everything he's allowed to do and not allowed to do on the recruiting trail. That's his jam for sure.
There you go. There you go. Matt Green, we can follow you on Twitter. Matt_W_Green. Anything else you'd like to plug as we wrap up here late tonight?
That's all I got, man. I just want to remind everyone to never stop the chop. Just keep it going. Braves 2-0 in the NLCS. Gotta love it.
There you go. There's no way these Atlanta Braves could hurt us. There's no way an Atlanta sports team could blow a 2-0 lead.
This
in the NLCS.
This is the first team that is incapable of hurting us because they're playing with house money. Like, no one is expecting this team to win the World Series. Like, obviously we're rooting for it.
You are preposterous if you don't think people are going to lose their minds if they go up 3-0 and lose this series.
I mean, if they go up 3-0, like that, yeah.
I mean, if they're up 3-1 again.
Yeah, but I don't think people are going to lose their minds because it's like,
oh,
this team,
you're mistaken, sir.
I think people are taking a logical approach with this specific team.
They are not. They're fans.
The injuries and Acuña not being there. Like,
you're not going to be logical really about this. What? What is happening?
No business being there, though.
It doesn't matter. You don't think about any of that. That's what you think about in January. It's not what you think about this year. That's just not.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think. Okay. I think it's a successful season, the fact they've gotten this.
Well, far. Either way, we're not there yet. We don't have to worry about that yet, because
exactly.
Right now they're up 2-0.
We got Charlie Morton going game 3. We're going to go win that thing in 4 games. Bring the World Series to Atlanta. It's what Hank would have wanted.
There you go. There you go. Matt Green, talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.